Bulls were both off last night. The Bucks are off again tonight. The Bulls host Detroit. Over in the NHL, the Blackhawks beat San Jose 4-1. Now, that forecast from the National Weather Service, sunny, windy, and bitterly cold. Wind chill advisory up till 10 a.m. High today 16, wind chills down to minus 29. Here are the numbers right now. Minus 6 in Racine and Kenosha. Minus 8 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Wind chill at 23 below. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It is now 10 and a half minutes after 8, just ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am very excited that we can begin this week of morning shows with a very good friend of the program who has also not been on the program in some time, therapist Amy Champeau, who at least for the time being, I understand, has relocated to sunny Arizona, but joins us via telephone to offer some thoughts on a question which I posed to her, namely whether or not she would have something meaningful to say about a challenge which many of us, just about all of us, are likely to face over the holidays. And it's a challenge we've all faced essentially since the day after this hotly contested presidential election. Namely, how do we have cordial, meaningful, constructive conversations with people with whom we sharply differ on all kinds of different matters? And particularly when it might be that we find ourselves differing in ways that we never even maybe thought possible. That is, some of us find ourselves surprised to learn of the choices that certain people made in this particular election and come to discover things about them and their attitudes about the world that we didn't realize were there. And of course, what's particularly challenging when it comes to the holidays is that many of these conversations are not just around the water cooler with people we work with or with a neighbor or someone at church, but in many cases over the holidays particularly, these are conversations which we are apt to have with people we love, with people we respect and admire, and with whom we want to have strong and abiding relationships and do not want to see those relationships ruptured. Well, how does one handle those kind of situations that can be fraught with all kinds of difficulties and risks? It is true that families are often that place of in a sense, personal stronghold, where we have a sense that those relationships will go on, even if there are difficulties and disagreements. But that's not always the case. And at any rate, it can still make for some really, really uncomfortable and painful moments during what is supposed to be a joyous, happy time. So Amy Champeau very graciously agreed to respond to this question, and I think has some very, very helpful things to say. So I'm really glad that she is making time in her schedule to join me via telephone to have this conversation today. Amy Champeau, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here and honored to be on the morning show. It's wonderful.
Well, we've had a great time in previous conversations, and I'm excited about this one as well.
Thank you.
You want to tell us right off the bat that actually at least one study has been done trying to quantify just how many friendships or close relationships have suffered some kind of damage or perhaps even been ended altogether in the wake of this presidential election, and perhaps in some cases even before, as things began really heating up. What can you tell us about that, both in terms of what sort of studies have been done and what you have seen in your own practice?
Yeah, so in preparation for this show, first of all, when you asked me, I was like, well, am I really the person to talk about this? Because, you know, I have to say I'm not the most politically oriented, I guess. But then I thought about my practice and how much distress is in therapist's office around this. I participate on some listservs for psychotherapists who communicate and share ideas. And after the election, there was just a plethora of comments from therapists about the anguish and the stress that people were experiencing. Many clients were traumatized during the election by issues that were raised that brought up old traumas that they had had or experiences that they had had in the world. So even before the election was over, there was a lot of increased distress that was seen in therapists' office, not just mine, and a lot of communication. And here in Tucson, where I am currently, there were therapists were putting groups together for people to be able to come together and talk about their feelings. So as I was preparing for the show, I came across this poll that said that 7% of voters reported having lost or ended a friendship or relationship because of the presidential race. And that is, I don't know where they got that information, but that's a really high number of people to have ended a relationship with somebody as a result of the outcome of the election. And that doesn't speak to those relationships that have become more strained or ruptured or uncomfortable. In my own practice, I wanted to give an example of a situation. A woman that I'm working with is employed, articulate, has other issues that she's seeing me for. And as Thanksgiving came around, she started talking about how she didn't know if she could go to visit her parents over the holidays because her brother was coming from out of state and he had very different political views, and she knew that they had some difference of opinion, but knowing what his views were made her feel like he wasn't at all the kind of person that she could ever allow into her life and relate to. And pretty much at that time, she had decided she was just going to be absent from the family gathering. As it turned out, she didn't stay absent. She did go and participate to some extent, so there wasn't a complete cutoff. But it was like a moral struggle for her to make the decision of whether to be with the family. And of course, for many families, I've disguised some information about her, by the way, but for many families, there are already uncomfortable issues that might make the holidays difficult as it is. And then this is another layer on top of that that can even bring out, you know, accentuate some of the feelings of not belonging or being different or being the black sheep or whatever those issues were that are already there.
Right. So this is a moment in time when some of that is perhaps heightened, or we find our attention drawn to those old tensions or old issues, maybe in new ways that are maybe newly painful.
Yep, drawn. I mean, they're accentuated. So somebody might feel like, oh, I've always been the rebel in the family, and now here it is, and so I can't. So in a lot of cases, it's not necessarily news, but it's heightened change in the relationships. Though for some relationships, there's, like you were speaking at the in your introduction, there's the element of surprise. Like, oh, I didn't know that person thought that way and felt that way. And then a person might be reevaluating the basis for how they're connecting with that person.
Right.
There are many issues that are heightened in terms of our friendships and relationships, but it's not really news that we have ruptures in relationships and that those come out more at certain times. I do think that we can talk more about this as we go along. There's a lot of polarization now in our country and in the world, and that's particularly painful. And we can talk about how to be connected with other people, because, I think about this. This is my Pollyanna side coming out, maybe, but I think about this, that all and listeners may not agree with me, but all human beings are probably more similar than they are different. I mean, when we think about it, nobody wants themselves or their children or relatives to get sick or to suffer. We all want to have good roof over our head, and we all bleed. I mean, we all, at some level, there's a commonality. But because of what happens in our lives and the influences on us and the traumas that we experience, we develop in certain ways. And some of the time, we develop in reaction to fears and anger and things like that that lead us in certain ways. So in terms of my talk here, one thing I want to talk about is, if there is this kind of polarization in a family, let's say, and they're moving towards the holidays, what are some ways that people can handle that so that they're not completely disconnected?
Right.
And the other thing that I wanted to talk about is how we can still recognize the commonalities, I guess, that we have as human beings, because the more polarized we are, the less likelihood there is for understanding. And I'm saying this because I've just come off of an 8-day silent meditation retreat, so I'm sort of in this mode. But really, what do we do with the person or the group or the nation or that is the other?
Right.
And I think that's really important at this time or any time of year to consider.
Sure. I know that you have some thoughts on why in this particular instance so much rupture of relationships has occurred, and I think you see as particularly important elements that maybe made this a little worse than sometimes, sort of dual fears. One of them, just kind of a general uncertainty about the future. What does this necessarily mean for our future? And then also a sense of our reaction to what occurred, maybe being quite emotionally rooted as much as it is also sort of academically or intellectually stimulated. I mean, there are a lot of things going on in this instance that make it a particularly volatile time in terms of relationships.
Yeah, I think that the things that divide us, I think, are mostly emotional. I mean, we can have a lot of ideas about things. I think that in this campaign and the divisiveness of it and the issues that were raised that were very terrifying, I think it's created a lot of anxiety. It has created a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear about the future and really a lot of terror. And even in my interactions with people, not in my office, not clients, I mean, I hear so much about the fear of, you know, maybe this is the end of everything. You know, maybe this is the end of the world. And, you know, I don't know whether it is or it isn't, but the divisiveness, the tone, the polarization, the feelings of things being very wrong on one hand or having to be a certain way. I mean, it's the emotional, the anxieties and the fears and the anger are just really heightened. And they haven't really gone down a lot.
Not very much. Yeah,
not
I think
very much.
I think part of what you're talking about is that the tone of this campaign began to take on a sense of do or die, life or death, and
yep.
and on both sides that if the person in the opposing party on the other side of the aisle is elected, there is no telling what kind of ruin awaits us, and
that's right.
and in various ways that was said on both sides, and to a large extent, potential voters on both sides of the aisle believed that, and perhaps in some cases with good reason, and perhaps other cases not. But the idea that fear was driving almost everybody who voted in this election is a really telling factor.
And there's still fear, and there's a lot of unknown, and when people... I mean, uncertainty is the most difficult thing for people to deal with, the most scary. I mean, it's like when we know what we're dealing with, even if it's not what we want, then I think people can sort of settle in. But the huge uncertainty, but it's that tone of this is, if it doesn't go this way, this is the right way. If it doesn't go the right way, then it's going to be completely the wrong way. And the wrong way means all sorts of devastation.
Right.
And so people are just, I think, holding that. And there's still that feeling, I mean, building up to the change of precedent, and it's very heightened, a lot of fear.
Right. And so it is fear / anger, of course, that has led to, again, so many relationships being ruptured. I know you have something to say about the importance of trying to repair relationships that have suffered disruption or perhaps even have been ended altogether. And maybe we should even think about that word repair that you are choosing to use here. Repair or repair.
Yeah, repair. Well, interestingly, in my preparation for the show, there were stories about couples, married or, you know, committed couples who were whose relationships were ruptured because they didn't agree on who their candidate was. And the notion of repair in relationships actually comes from or was popularized and developed by a man by the name of John Gottman, who has really done a huge amount for couples' relationships, and his theories have helped couples to be able to function better. And so a lot of these ideas around repair, I mean, repair, right, means come back together, to become a couple or to recouple. And it's repair does not mean that you agree with everything, but it means that you value the relationship enough to put it in a place where it's functioning and where there's respect. So I actually had put together, there's some marriage and family therapy gurus that are putting some of these ideas out there, but kind of 10 tips to sort of bury the hatchet or to, I mean, sometimes in these situations, we realize that there are, that the differences between myself and someone else are so great, and maybe that relationship is not a good one for me, right? I mean, that could come to light. Maybe there were talks about abuses or something in the relation, in the election, and all of a sudden one is realizing that particular people were causing harm, trauma, abuse to them in their lives, and they may decide for some reason to not repair. And there can be some clarity about that. I mean, that has consequences, but sometimes that, in certain cases, that can be necessary. But for people who feel kind of dumped, you know, they feel like, okay, my family member, I've never really gotten along with that person, but I don't want to be just sitting home in my house all by myself on the holidays, and I do want to still be connected with my family. You know, they kind of say, okay, and family is where people are supposed to be able to be who they are. Whether that works in some families or not, we don't know. But anyway, here are some kind of 10 tips for dealing with this just in the current circumstances, and maybe it would apply whether the election were, you know, here or not. But anyway, here are a couple of tips. One is if it, and these are particular to the election, some of these, if it was your candidate that won, don't gloat about it to people who didn't want that candidate. And on the same hand, if your candidate didn't win, don't predict the end of the world. So it's kind of like, okay, the election is over, the decision was made, and these may be your feelings, but putting those feelings forward is probably not going to create harmony.
So in other words, if this is about repairing this particular relationship that has ruptured over this,
yes.
We're talking about, in order for this relationship to be repaired, this is what needs to be done. You're not
right.
Speaking sweepingly here that, well, never say anything at all along those lines to anyone ever. But if
right.
But when it comes to burying the hatchet with a particular person who's important to you, it needs to start with something as basic as what you just outlined.
Right. I mean, if this is a situation where you're going to go to your holiday dinner and you want things to go well, for example, these could be some things that could be helpful.
Right. Very
and,
good.
Right. And then another one is, and this is, I think, applies to relationships across the board, is don't continue arguments that will get you nowhere. I mean, when I work with couples, you know, oftentimes people keep having the same argument over and over again. And I usually say to them, there's something here, something beneath the surface. But don't keep going over the same territory unless you're going to bring something new into the mix or something that's going to be helpful. So anyway, this is a tip for if you want to get along with someone that you're at odds with. I mean, how, you know, if each person is in their particular corner and they keep saying the same thing over and over again, then what is it? What is their intention and what is it that they want to have happen? I mean, is it that they're trying to convince the other person that they're wrong? So, or, you know, or are you trying to come to some kind of understanding? So some of it is trying to understand your intention of having this conversation with a person or having this continued argument.
Right, and being mature enough to let go of an argument that ultimately serves no meaningful purpose. Again, it's not that you never get to argue with anybody ever again, especially about matters that might be of very grave importance to you, but when it comes to repairing a relationship with, for instance, a loved one or someone important in
yeah.
your life, this is a good step to take.
Yep. And along with that, if you do need to vent, then it's sometimes useful to do that with people who share the same view. So sometimes it's helpful for people to get together and say, you know, this, I just can't get through to this person. I don't understand how they could have this such an opposite view, and to have other people that feel the same way can be a good place to put that frustration. As opposed to, again, this is if you want to repair with someone. And at holiday gatherings, for example, if somebody brings up something about the election that you oppose, you can say something. You don't have to get hooked in. Now, that's really hard for people, because when emotions run high, it's easy to get hooked in emotionally. But I would imagine that most people don't want to have that happening at their holiday gathering. And so something that someone could say is, I didn't vote for that person, but I hope he does a good job, and then go on and get a snack or something like that and just excuse yourself. I mean, that sounds, it maybe sounds very surface, but you know, we really know how to do these things quite a bit, because, you know, if you're in any kind of business, you know how to do this. You know how to see where a conversation is going and then steer away from it. So, and then go and connect with other people. And then and along these lines, too, is, like, let's say this is someone very dear to you. You're married to the person, or this is your parent, or this is a relationship that you really want to, that you value. And so one suggestion from Bill Doherty, he's a marriage and family therapist, is to agree to put it in a box, leave it on the shelf, and move on. So I think that would be a very good step in repair, if both people could say, okay, we agree to disagree on this, and we're putting it aside, and this is not something we're going to continue to hash over. So then, in terms of repair also, I think that one of the most important parts of repair, or actions that people can do, is to apologize. For example, in the heat of the moment, if somebody said something hurtful, to apologize for it. And if someone apologizes to you, to accept the apology. That's one of the basic rules of repair. And even though people can say, well, what does an apology do? I think one of the things that an apology does is that it lets you know that the other person is at least thinking about the situation. Mm. And then another part of repair is to really be cautious about, if you do want to have these kinds of discussions, heated discussions about differences of opinion, differences of emotion, is to be cautious about when you have these discussions. The more planned a discussion is, the more likely it is that people are going to be more rational. So it's like, schedule a time for it. Don't do it when you're upset about something, or when you're on the run, when you're running out the door, or throw it at somebody in the heat of anger about something else. So if there do need to be some conversations on some difficult subjects, and really whether it's political or not, the best policy is to say, okay, we have this to talk about. When can we do that? And to do it at a time when both people are actually present. Now, you know, in my own life, I know that that's not really easy to do, because, you know, to have that kind of maturity, I guess. But these are some ideas that people can try.
Right. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What? Go ahead.
So I have two more. One is, don't try to be right or change the person. So a lot of times when we're having heated conversations with someone, we're really, what we want is to convince the other person that they're wrong or to get them to change in some way. And usually that is not, people don't respond well to that. They tend to feel criticized and defensive, and they shut down. And so it really requires looking again, as I said, at your own intentions about this. When I work with couples, I ask them the question, are you venting or are you problem solving? I mean, if you just want to vent, then I guess that's okay. But if you're trying to change someone or get them to see your point of view, you know, it's something to really think about. What is in this for me? Is it that I can't tolerate this person unless I get them to change their point of view? And then the last tip for burying the hatchet or getting along with others who are polar opposites is respect your own pace. So my client that I was speaking about, when I spoke to her before Thanksgiving, she wasn't sure how much of being with her family she could tolerate or if she could at all. And rather than say, well, the holiday is coming, I better hurry up and do it, she was able to say, okay, this is how much I can deal with at this particular time. Maybe I won't go for the meal. Maybe I'll go afterwards and hang out a little bit. And she did it on her own time and in her own pacing so that she was able to stay connected with herself. And that was very powerful because in many of our families, we have a lot of shoulds about how we should be. And so, so really being thoughtful about how much, you know, if we try to do too much or push things too fast or too far, often that backfires. So those are some thoughts that I came up with in terms of socializing or repairing with people that we care about.
I like that. The point about apology brings to mind the fact that I think what often happens is when we are in the heat of the moment and talking about those on the other side, there is a temptation to demonize and also to generalize. Yeah. And so if you vote for her, you're an idiot. If you vote for him, you're a racist. And then particularly in a forum like Facebook, you will suddenly realize that there is a person on the other end of what I just said whom I targeted. And I perhaps didn't stop to realize that, wait a minute, I really like this person. I respect this one individual person, even though he or she happens to be on the other side of this divide. But they end up feeling as though you have singled them out and are really pointing this nasty accusation, whatever it may be, at them. And so I think a lot of people find themselves in the need of having to apologize for things that they have said that have been hurtful in a way that they did not necessarily intend.
I think that's really important because one of the things that makes me think about is that many people, like you said, they've sort of generalized or lumped people into a group. You know, well, if my brother voted for so-and-so, then that must mean that he's blah, blah, blah. And you know, there may be some differences of belief, but to really think about broadening out your view of the person, like looking at the whole picture instead of zeroing in on those particular differences. So, you know, is this a person that I like to play tennis with? Or, you know, what kinds of encounters have I had with this person before? And to put it in a broader perspective rather than all of these people are in this box and all of these people are in this box and they're all alike and they're all bad. And so, you know, it made me think too of something that I saw. I think it was on Facebook, it was, or somewhere it came across my screen. And they had, they did a study or an experiment in Europe. So Europe has an influx of immigrants. And so there was a lot of distrust among people who had been there for a long time and then immigrants that were of different ethnicities. And they took all of these, they took random people and they put them in a room with the other person who is different. And they had them just look at each other in the eye for 5 minutes or 10 minutes without speaking. And without even knowing anything about each other, at the end, they were all like loving the other person. They felt like they had known that person, even though they could see that their skin was a different color and they'd had different experiences. And so the idea of, and there are, they do these experiments with all sorts of polarized groups, but that was really meaningful to me, that that there was this way of the humanity of the other person being felt in that kind of a context.
Right.
So I think that's important to think about.
Yeah. We're speaking with therapist Amy Champeau about potentially difficult conversations that one might be having over these upcoming holidays, and how those conversations can maybe unfold in the most constructive fashion, and maybe the things not to say or things not to do if one is really serious about, in particular, trying to repair a relationship that has suffered some kind of rupture in the wake of this this campaign. We were talking earlier, Amy, about the sweeping generalizations that are so tempting to make, and the demonization that is often a part of that, that all of you are dummies or all of you are racists or whatever it might be. And I know that when it comes to this kind of polarization and this sense of thinking of a sweeping portion of our population as the other, that the perspective of those like yourself who have studied the work of Carl Jung, there is a very particular perspective shared that might be helpful to this. I wish we had more time to talk about it, but share just kind of the heart and soul of what Jungian principles have to say about this matter of the other.
Yeah, I'll share a little bit about that. And then I if we have time, I'd like to just give a few more things people can do to kind of help themselves if they get into a challenging conversation.
Absolutely.
But so Jung, Carl Jung, he came up with a whole idea of how our inner selves work. We have a psyche, and the psyche is made up of different parts of ourselves. Many and most of those parts are unconscious parts of ourselves, so that we don't have access to them through our conscious thinking, but they still push us nevertheless. You know, it's the kind of thing where you're doing something like, I don't know how that ever came into my mind. So the listeners are probably familiar with terms like the shadow. And so the shadow is a part of our unconscious that either are parts of ourselves that we've pushed down because we don't like them, or there are things that have never come to light. So it's the parts about ourselves that we either consciously don't like and we've pushed them down, or there are things that are negative that we're not in touch with. So in a Jungian view, what we aren't conscious of inside of ourselves, we often see outside of ourselves in the world. And so for example, if you're a person who has a lot of anger, but you're not really in touch with it that much, you might look out there in the world and see all those angry people. So from a Jungian perspective, what we don't claim in ourselves is often projected out onto others. And so how that looks is that I am the good one, and I don't have any flaws, and that person over there is the bad one. So we're the good country, they're the bad country. And so, or I'm in the right, that person's in the wrong. So this is sort of the basis from a Jungian view of how we become polarized, because in many ways, from a Jungian perspective, we need to own the parts of ourselves that we are not wanting to accept. So for example, we might look outside of ourselves and say, wow, look at all those people are racist. But from a Jungian perspective, then that might be a clue and say, I wonder where that racism is in me. And so so in a Jungian perspective, our relationship with others are a direct function of our relationship with ourselves. And the best we can do for our relationship with others is to become more conscious of ourselves. So when we look out there and see the badness in something else or someone else, it's like, how can I be open and curious and have some humility and really look at where that is in me? And so that would be like a Jungian way of working with this. Anyway, that's just a little, the process of splitting off the negative and seeing it out there in the world or in others is called projection. And there's a process of reclaiming our projections is what it is. So at the first part of projection, we just think that the whole problem is out there. There's no problem in here inside of ourselves. And the process of reclaiming the projections is then being realizing that, just like you were saying, this person is not only those bad things. And then we realize that we need to take a look at the other person in a broader light. And then we look at the ways in which we're similar to the other person. And then we look inside of ourselves to see what part of ourselves might have been projected out there onto the other.
And so it's interesting to think. And it's interesting to think about how that could be used to not only address kind of a specific instance of disruption in a relationship, but even into something sort of longer term and more chronic. Like, for instance, attitudes of bigotry, of intense prejudice. That at the root of that might be this kind of process of projection that we might not even be aware of.
Yeah, because if we live in a culture, we have all internalized a lot of stuff. We may not identify ourselves with that, but we all have even if we're not aware of it, by living with others and living in a culture and being raised the way we are and whatever, we've internalized all sorts of prejudices. And they're not easy. It's not easy to uncover. But, you know, as I know that for myself, I was raised in certain religious background and everything, and yet I've internalized negativities towards those aspects, even of myself and my own group. So really it's very challenging, because it's so much easier to see the bad out there in someone else, the prejudice or the misogyny or whatever.
Right.
But we all have a seed of it inside of ourselves. So if we can reclaim that a little bit, on the other hand, I do think that in the world, part of what we need to do is work for what we believe in. I mean, not just complain about it, but actually do something. And that would be a Jungian view of dealing with the other. And that isn't just in these global things. One of the great books that I love is a book about relationships called The Eden Project, In Search of the Magical Other. And it's written by a Jungian by the name of James Hollis. And that's his whole perspective on our intimate relationships, is that we're always sort of projecting something onto them. And, you know, anyway, that's a whole other topic. But
that I hope we can approach sometime. And I know that you also have thoughts that spring from this on what reconciliation looks like and the importance of qualities like openness and curiosity and humility that probably also fold nicely as reminders about how we can have some of these difficult conversations. We have about 3 minutes that remain, so for any closing thoughts that you have on how these conversations can perhaps unfold as successfully as possible, particularly in a relationship where we have felt a bit of disruption and want some healing to occur.
Okay, well, I think that one of the most important things is to consider how you're, if you are going to have a conversation with somebody that is difficult and where there are strong negative emotions at play, is to realize that how the conversation starts is probably how it's going to end. So that 97% of the time, if a conversation starts negatively, it will end negatively. So keep that in mind and perhaps take a softer approach. Take breaks if things get heated. And remember to really breathe, because when we get stressed and tight in our bodies, our breath gets stuck inside of our chest and in our upper body. So really remembering to connect with the breath and breathe, but to really remember that a softer approach and to an attitude of curiosity can often go a long way towards being able to have more understanding.
I could not agree more. And one of the things I have particularly tried to do in Facebook conversations that could have so easily been very adversarial is to try to bring to it a real genuine curiosity about how can you, in a sense, I'm thinking to myself, how can you possibly believe that? Or how could you possibly vote for such and such a person? But going beyond my sort of bewilderment to try to find real curiosity. I mean, I really want to know what was behind those choices, what is behind your attitudes, and maybe it is something besides ignorance or anger or bitterness or whatever it is that I might, or foolishness or whatever one might assign to those attitudes. Amy, I think you've given us a whole lot to think about today, and I hope that it will prove helpful to people as the holidays approach and the possibility of having these potentially awkward and difficult conversations arise. And I hope that at some point early in 2017, we can return to some of these topics that we've just sort of touched on and explore them in a little further depth. How is life for you in Arizona?
It's great. And it was like 82 degrees yesterday, so I can't complain. But I did want to say I still do see clients from the Midwest. I see them on Skype, and I do phone work with people, and I have some clients locally. So if anybody does want to contact me, they could still do that. My phone number is still a 262 number, 262-412-0646.
Great. Amy Champeau, thank you for making time for this conversation, and best wishes to you.
Yeah, happy holidays. Nice talking to you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, among other things, we're going to be talking with several representatives of a group called Art Root, which is based in Racine and determined to make Racine a more and more vibrant community, primarily through an enrichment of its arts community and finding ways to have the artists in the community of Racine be even more closely connected with one another. On Wednesday, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, pays his monthly visit to the program. And on Thursday and Friday, you're going to be hearing the radio-style reenactment of the holiday classic A Christmas Carol. And that will be on beginning on Thursday.